It's Jim. It's the World of Bonds. It's Friday, the 27th of January, 2023. This is for professional investors only, never ever investment advice. I've done a lot of LEMSIP this week, so it's probably just as well that markets have been a bit of a snooze fest over the past few days. 10-year US Treasuries are stuck around the 3.5% level where they've been for a bit. US dollar remains very weak. Yen remains strong against it, but generally things have calmed down there too. And credit is very, very strong as before, and very much in demand. When you look at fund flows and things like that, other measures of investor interest in the asset class. But at the same time, supply has been really very heavy, and so it's little changed in terms of spreads towards the end of the week. So look at crossover, that measure of European high yield spreads as measured by CDS levels on aggregate. That's at 407, which is roughly where it's been for a couple of weeks now, having rallied all the way down from 650 or so back in October 2022, and it started 2023 at 470. Now, JP Morgan just this evening put out a note calling for a final 15 basis points additional tightening in Eurozone investment grade credit. The reasons they give are the good old one, more buyers and sellers, i.e. the imbalance between demand for the credit asset class, which is certainly true when you see demand for some of the new issues, but a kind of reduced amount of new issuance itself. So more buyers and sellers in the asset class, producing a tightening of spreads. They also point to things we've talked about before, like the huge fall in gas prices we've seen, China reopening. And I think that in general, as again we've talked about, the good news, the positive news stories for the markets in general just keep coming. So far, of those names in the S&P 500 who have reported their fourth quarter earnings, 71% of them have beat expectations that the market had. We also had the release of growth numbers for the fourth quarter in the United States too. And it's now a fact that the lost GDP from the COVID pandemic is effectively regained. So if you drew a kind of trend line, a potential GDP growth line, going back before the pandemic and extended it forward to today, we're now back touching that line, obviously having fallen way below it during the pandemic itself. So we've regained the lost output that we had, and we're now tracking back with positive growth. So 2022, we had plus 2.1% GDP growth in the United States on an annual basis. Now, next week is going to be all about the big central banks. Not the BOJ in this case. We've had their no move, but it's going to be the FOMC expected to hike by 25 basis points up to 4.75%, and that's just 25 basis points away from the expected peak in rates from the United States. Of course, we're also now pricing in rate cuts from the Fed sometime after the third, fourth quarter of this year. My reading of Fed speak lately is that 5% and then hold for a while is much more likely than this immediate rate cutting cycle coming into play almost as soon as they've got to 5%. But obviously a lot can happen over the course of the year, and rightly they will be data dependent. The ECB have got 50 basis points nailed on by most of the street at the moment as their forecast. And, you know, that's been confirmed by statements by people like Klaas Knot, a board member, who said that will be the pace for a multiple number of meetings, i.e. the reduction from 75 to 50, and it will stay at 50 for a multiple number of meetings. Now, the market reckons we're only 125 basis points away from the peak in the ECB rate as well. So the multiple number, if the market's right, the multiple number that Knot talks about can only be two more and then a 25 basis point hike. So, you know, again, the peak is being priced in by bond markets in Europe too. And the Bank of England also meet next week. They're pricing for 50 basis points as well. As with the Fed, UK rates peak in the second quarter of the year, according to markets, and then start to be cut at the end of 2023. Not loads of data out of the UK over the week, but I thought one bit was interesting, and that was the huge fall in UK car production. So number of cars being built in the UK has fallen to a 66-year low. Not seen this few cars built since 1956. As recently as 2016, we were building over 1.6 million cars per year. And that was a high point of at least the last 40 years, maybe longer. But we're now below 0.8 million. And of course, there are some issues around supply of semiconductors and chips and so forth. Also, Brexit probably taking its toll there to some extent as well. But not good news on the face of it. However, Jeremy Hunt this morning, the Chancellor, was out talking, poo-pooing naysayers on the UK economy and trying to talk it up, talk ourselves out of the doom and gloom mode. But he did also rule out that we were going to get any kind of sugar rush of tax cuts in the next fiscal event that we'll see in spring this year, which I guess is probably quite sensible given what happened at the last time they tried those tax cuts. I'm going to finish on an academic paper, which was released on Monday this week and got quite a lot of attention at the time. It's by Jan Eckhout of the UPF Barcelona University, and it's called Instantaneous Inflation. And in it, he argues that the inflation measures that central banks are using are way too backward-looking. And of course, we know this. It takes a while to collect data. There's also quite a lot of focus in the press and in wage round negotiations and all of these things on the year-on-year number, which is, you know, really high at the moment, but could potentially disguise the fact that month-on-month prices could be falling. So I think that on the face of it, that bit was already known, that using a year-on-year measure that's based on inflation numbers that came out a couple of months ago, etc., by the time you've processed all the prices, gives you something that isn't very useful for setting policy. But he there's quite a lot of maths in this paper, and to be honest, a lot of it's beyond me. So please go and have a look at it yourself. It is called Instantaneous Inflation. It kind of uses some maths to heavily weight the very most recent inflation data that's available. And it shows that on this measure of inflation in the US and indeed in the Eurozone, inflation is actually already back at the 2% target year on year. So far from being 8, 9, 10% year on year, we're actually back at 2% year on year. If we, you know, effectively annualise cleverly the most recent inflation number. The UK, however, is still above target, but those other places, US and Eurozone, interestingly, you know, it does suggest we're back at target already. And that puts central banks in a position, if they're following this measure, where they probably wouldn't be hiking at all next week. The author does suggest that the Office of National Statistics and other statistical agencies change the way they think about inflation and don't just publish on a monthly basis, but have a number that they update continuously. You know, if you get some data in from Sainsbury's on Monday next week, add that into the inflation number straight away. And so you've got a continuously updated inflation basket that gives you much more up-to-date data and allows central banks to act on the most recent, most significant data out there. So continuous inflation monitoring is the kind of idea of this paper, Instantaneous Inflation, if you want to go and have a read of it. I think the other, perhaps, argument that maybe central banks are a bit behind the curve in tightening at the moment is that people are starting to point out what's going on with US money supply. The money supply measure that most people look at most frequently in the US is M2, a kind of broad measure of money. And we're seeing at the moment what some people are calling the biggest collapse in M2 money supply since the Great Depression. So, you know, a huge expansion in money supply post-2008 and again post-COVID in terms of pumping money into the economy in ways that we know through QE and so forth. Now we're starting to see that roll over and fall quite rapidly, which might presage some disinflationary pressures on the economy if you believe that that expansion in the money supply is the reason we've got inflation in the economy. Of course, you know, a lot of this is, it depends on how much of a monetarist you are and how much you think this is about money and how much you think it is about supply disruptions and things like that, or whether indeed, as most people do, it's a combination of the two. Anyway, that'll do for this week. I'll go and have a cough, have another lemsip, and speak to you next week. Cheers.